Welcome to ACP's podcast, Inside the Lab, where we discuss anything and everything that concerns today's laboratory professionals and pathologists. My name is Dr. Lotu Mulder. I'm the Director of Leadership and Empowerment at ACP, and I'm one of your hosts.
Hey, everybody. My name is Kelly Swales, and I'm also one of your hosts. I'm an ASCP certified clinical laboratory scientist, and I work in the publications department at ASCP. Today, we're talking about patient-centered care from a laboratory perspective, and we have three guests, and I'll let them introduce themselves. Carrie, if you want to get us started.
Sure. Good morning. My name is Carrie Bartosz. I'm the laboratory supervisor at University Hospital in San Antonio in microbiology.
My name is Claudia Courtwright. I'm a technical supervisor in microbiology services at University Hospital in San Antonio. I'm a MLS ASCP certified.
My name is Scott Bowman. I'm a medical laboratory scientist here at University Hospital, and I am a bench technologist.
Awesome, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. I've just got a little bit of housekeeping out of the way, and then we'll get started right in on our conversation. CME and CMLE will be available for listening to this podcast in the ASCP store. The American Society for Clinical Pathology is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide, you guessed it, continuing medical education for physicians. ASCP designates this enduring material for a maximum of one AMA, PRA, Category 1 credit. Physicians should only claim the credit commensurate with the extent of their participation in the activity. All right. So my first question for you guys is, from your perspectives, how can frontline laboratory professionals be an advocate for patients or patient safety from the bench? I feel like whenever we're on the bench, sometimes even we feel like we're a little bit of in a black box, right? We've got like three layers of clinicians between us and the patient. So how can we be that advocate for patients?
Well, I think Claudia and I actually were having a conversation last week about one of the things that we do here is we are, I guess, a small enough laboratory that a lot of the times we're looking at these as patients. We're not looking at them as a number. We're not looking at them as just another sample. Sometimes if we're looking for a sample, it's, where's Carrie Bartosz's sample? Have you seen it lately? You know, that's one of the ways that we're kind of putting it in perspective for us.
How big is your lab?
Well, microbiology services as a whole, we have about 50 employees, but we kind of are in the immunology, molecular, virology area. So we are first shift, we have about 12 employees over there. We have five on second shift and then another four on third shift.
Okay. So like the laboratory itself is quite big, but you're kind of like in a subsection of a subsection. Yeah. So you're, you guys got a tight knit group. Okay.
Yeah. Now we do talk about them as patients and we do refer to them often as their patient name, but we do identify with specimen ID numbers.
Yes, yes.
Right.
We always do that backup stuff. But, you know, one thing for somebody, even in a larger lab, is not to be afraid to ask questions. If you have a result that doesn't look right, or if there's a concern about a procedure, and to always understand why you're doing what you're doing. Don't be afraid to ask that question. You know, why is this test important? What is the principle of the test? How does the instrument work?
Yes, ma'am. One of the things that we kind of instill in new employees is that there is a patient at the end of the sample. It's not just a red top tube or a gold top tube, that there is somebody. And if you think past just a sample or a tube, that it could be a loved one or a family member or somebody that you know, and you have to treat them with the sample with respect and get out results in a timely manner. And accurate results is always your goal. But you get lost in the fact that you're here for your shift, and as soon as those samples are gone, you can do something else. You have
right.
to be focused on what you're doing and what the end product. It's for the patient's care and patient safety.
Sometimes you're right. It's easy to forget that because we get so lost in the weeds of the science a little bit, especially when you're on the bench. You know, the technology is always changing. You're always getting new instruments. You're always, you know, in micro, they're changing the names of organisms all the time, whatever. So you, to keep up with yourself professionally on a scientific level, it's easy to forget kind of why you're there and what you're doing it for. But I think that's a really good reminder that you guys are instilling in your employees that, no, this is why we're here.
And I think so often with patient advocacy, we think about it requiring direct patient access. But can you all talk about a time where you advocated for a patient and what really empowered you to act and be proactive in that situation, regardless of if you had direct patient access?
Well, I think kind of to go along the lines of what we were just talking about, right? Who knows better the science behind what's happening with these tests than we do here in the lab? And actually, one of our instruments, Scott's kind of our primary user. He's the person who trains everybody on it. And that particular instrument uses an internal control that has factor 13. And so one of the things that we've kind of instilled in everybody who's running that is if you're getting some kind of error, you know, we need to bring it up. We need to address what's going on. Is this error a transient error or is it something actually going on with the patient themselves? And so that's something that everybody is kind of, we're used to now. As soon as we see this error, okay, we're going to kind of move it up and investigate a little further. And Claudia is one of our technical supervisors who does a lot of that investigation, actually. So do you want to go into
it? It depends on the error, and that comes with guidance from the company that produces the instrument. But a particular type of error is an indicator that you could have a false negative result. And so we can't release a negative result. And our first line is to just reach out to the physician, offer an alternative assessment through a reference laboratory. Now, if it's a one-time thing, I mean, this, let me backtrack. This instrument performs, I don't know, 10 or 12 different antibody tests. So if it's one antibody test on a patient that's not coming back with a result, you know, we follow it up this way. We have had patients where you see it across all of their testing. And once you start seeing that pattern of, hey, none of their tests are able to go through the instrument with a result, at that point is where Carrie especially started thinking, hey, this could be more related to an issue with factor 13 as opposed to a fibrin or just something with the sample, the one particular sample itself. And so it's just doing that kind of follow-up, looking at the patient history and realizing, hey, there's something going on with the patient involving clotting factors. And then Carrie and Scott then reaching out to the physicians and letting them know what the principle of the test is for the instrument, and then letting them have that information. Is that right? Kind of, yeah. How that one scenario played out.
Yeah. And one of the things that Claudia and Carrie were discussing is the fact that we have a procedure in place that walks through kind of stepwise. If you get an error, hey, is it a sample integrity error or is it something bigger? And a lot of times these sample integrity errors might be a bubble or a clot or something that once you rerun it, it resolves it and you get a valid result. But there's also part of the algorithm that tells us that if you keep on getting this error, don't just keep on rerunning it. Let's start looking into the patient's, you know, is this a one and done type scenario? Do we get it recollected? Is it a reproducible error? And so we have a procedure involved and in place that allows us to address this instead of get to the next level, either senior tech or supervisor, and say, hey, why did we run it 14 times?
Right.
And
right.
So we try to address this and teach people, like, you know, sometimes it's just a real simple thing. And then sometimes, for lack of a better word, you know, we're finding this unicorn that you were taught not to keep on looking for.
Right. It's like a zebra that you've been told you're never going to see this in your career. Don't even worry about it. Like, you're never going to see anybody with CKD, right?
Yeah.
This is sounding a little bit to me like something that they run into a little bit in clinical chemistry whenever they're doing glycohemoglobin determinations. Every once in a while, talking about zebras, someone will have a hemoglobin variant that will give like a glycated hemoglobin result of like 46 or something. And obviously they're not walking around with a blood sugar of 2000 all the time, right? So then you have to kind of investigate what's with this high glycohemoglobin. Is this a real actual result or whatever? So what you guys are really thinking about, or I think talking about, is just like your critical thinking skills and not taking answers for granted. It's one of those kind of scenarios, I think, that especially now, some people are like, oh, you know, artificial intelligence is going to come for our jobs. It's like, no, it's not really, because it's things like this. It's that critical thinking that we're taught to hone as a really, I think some folks would call it a soft skill, but I'm like, no, this is a hard skill that you have to have whenever you're working in the laboratory, to like really be able to think through scenarios and what could this be? And how do we, like you were saying earlier, Scott, like get the right patient out, or get the right results out for the patient, and not take 3 weeks to do it.
Yeah. And I think that kind of goes back. So I'm sure in talking with a bunch of laboratory personnel, you've come up with this too. We are not an outgoing group of people.
Speak for yourself. I'm like one of the five outgoing. I'm one of the five extroverts that work in the laboratory.
But yeah, kind of having that confidence too, that you know what you're talking about, and you know that, hey, I need to reach out to somebody. I need to tell them that there's something more going on. And, you know, having that confidence in yourself to say, you know what, I can talk to a physician. I can tell them, like, this is my specialty. This is where my schooling came into use here, that I understand what's going on. And so having that faith in yourself too, that you know what's going on.
You know what, you're kind of leading me into the question, next question I want to ask, which is like, how do you guys promote this culture of patient-centered care? And I think you just touched on it a little bit, not only having the confidence to speak out to your supervisor or something, or a coworker, but also to be able to call the doc and be like, here, this is what we have going on. I'm wondering if it's XYZ or whatever. How do you guys promote that kind of culture within your laboratory?
We deal with physicians who are ordering from order set. And so it might not get what they're really looking for. And for instance, we might have a sample who they have an ova and parasite test ordered, but the patient's onset of, by reviewing the patient's chart, was a diarrhea that was 5 hours ago, which normally you wouldn't see that. So we also offer, instead of sending that test out to a reference lab, we reach out to the clinician and say, hey, we offer this test that's a PCR test that will encompass a bacterial, a viral, and a parasitic, and you'll get results within 2 hours. You know, is this something that maybe is interested? And a lot of times, once they agree to it, you come back and it's got a result that they weren't expecting. But then they can treat accordingly versus just go into a limited O&P and you get the results in 3 or 4 days.
Right.
And the patient's already discharged. So I don't see how ordering a test with that type of turnaround time allows for good patient care.
And I will say, a lot of that also comes not only from our supervisor, our manager. I mean, there's a specific style of training that I've seen happen in the lab where you'll have a newer technologist come with an issue. And instead of, oh, well, you know, I'm the supervisor, I will take it and deal with it, it becomes more of asking questions and having that person on the bench follow through with guidance. And you do that over and over and over. And eventually, some people come with those skills naturally. Some people, they do need to be fine-tuned. And that process of teaching like that, I think, really helps develop an entire department that is questioning and looking. And then having a medical director that is involved and is accessible. And, you know, that's not always, I don't know, I haven't been in another lab. I got this job and I stayed here forever. But, you know, we've been fortunate that we have medical directors that are accessible and they interact with us routinely when particular cases come up. Like the one involving the BioPlex instrument, she was front and center with being excited that we had been able to find something that possibly could help a patient in real time. So
Yeah. And I think too, I don't know if it's just because like Claudia, I've been here my entire career too.
That actually speaks very well for your facility.
I don't care how much.
We, our institution in general, we are a teaching hospital. We teach incoming medical laboratory scientists, people that are in school right now. And, you know, I think that's an environment that has really been cultivated, is that we are trying to teach that incoming group of people those skills. And it's top down. Our medical directors are in here following up on cases with us and, you know, helping us kind of figure out some of these things as well. And so in the process, we're all learning 18 years, 20 plus years over here. We're all constantly learning something new.
And then what would you recommend to places where people might feel that they don't have that type of organizational culture, like where, whether they're, these people are supervisors themselves or not, is there something that you all would recommend as a place to start building or fostering that type of culture that promotes all of that?
It almost seems like you would have to have a good base and bring on people who are qualified to be able to understand the ramifications of their job, whether it's providing accurate results, timely results. And, you know, it's hard to teach somebody who doesn't understand the lab about reference intervals or QC and, you know, why do we tag receive dates on reagents? So if you start early and you, instead of just telling them, this is what you need to do, this is why we do it, and you keep on instilling the purpose why. And I think after you build a core, you can have enough people that are understanding to be able to run a lab or run a department in a more efficient way. That is, and the goal, because that's what we're here for, is the patient. We're not here for the QC and we're not here for the stats as much as it's making all of those things work for the patient's result.
And I wonder if reaching out, like if I've been fortunate that I'm in a very supportive environment, but for someone who isn't, I would think having to really reach out to people in other professional organizations would probably be the way to get the most support.
Well, I was going to say too, ask questions. We are the microbiology laboratory here at university. And so as you can imagine, 3 years ago, we had a surge in testing due to COVID.
I can't imagine why.
I don't know. So we hired a lot of brand new people, a lot of people fresh out of school who they'll get to that place where say, you know, you need open dates, you need expiration dates, all these little things. One of the things, so they were very responsive when, you know, hey, this came up, this, you know, we saw this, how can I help you? And actually, some of them we started meeting on a weekly basis to go over, they'd never been through a CAP inspection before. And so we started looking at the checklist together and say, hey, how do you think our lab responds to this type of question? What could you see that our lab does or could do better to kind of meet this patient standard of care that we need to have? And so I think those sort of things started clicking. And so they would ask more questions and it gave them a really, you had to learn quick, you know.
Oh, this, sure.
But I think it really did get them up to speed quicker than say another, you know, just wait out, you right. know, in 5 years, you'll have that down. You know, right. I think it fostered that a little bit more.
Well, it sounds like you guys don't have like a punitive culture as much as a like re-education culture.
Yes.
Yeah. And very proactive too, because, you know, your next CAP inspection wasn't going to be for what, like 6 months to a year. There's no reason to pull out those sheets, but actually, yes, there is. This is why we do the things and we don't do it just so we can pass the test. All of these things are on the test for a reason.
Right. As far as punitive, I mean, you've got to learn somewhere too. And if you're constantly getting your hand slapped, how you're not going to come back and ask, hey, I did this. If, you know,
right.
Nobody's stepping forward if they think that they're going to.
Well, yeah, it sounds like you're really fostering that open communication culture where there's no stupid questions, right?
Right.
Yeah, and most incidences or errors that might happen can almost always be traced to something in a process that has broken down or is not working as well. And sometimes a process that works great for 5 years, there'll be a subtle change somewhere else in maybe the way a sample is ordered or received, and you suddenly realize that process is no longer working. And so I think that speaks to not being punitive. Like you could spend 2 weeks, and Carrie's much better about being even-handed. She's helped mellow me. But that speaks to not being punitive, to let's look at what's going on in the process. What happened that broke down?
Right. Right.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of a process that supports patient-centered care. I mean, all of our processes hopefully support patient-centered care, right? That's the whole goal of healthcare. But do you have additional examples or certain things that really stand out to you, to any of you, all of you, of such a process?
We do, and I don't know what other labs do, but we do a lot of review. And we do review within the scope of our job. We do review of patient histories for several of our tests that do take time. So before an HIV confirmation result goes out, there is a review of the results of the patient history. Does this make sense? You know, if it's a patient where, you know, this, they were tested 6 months ago and they were fine, and now they're coming up positive, that would warrant a reach out to the clinician to just make sure that what we tested really was the correct sample. Is there a mislabeling error? Those kinds of things, to me, that's patient-centered care. And other labs may be doing that too. HIV viral loads, our viral loads, all of our viral loads, the way those are handled.
And I think even down, I mean, we have our HIV confirmatories are answered by technical supervisor, but down to whoever's running the test. I mean, we've had people come in and say, this doesn't make sense. This antibody result here is not correlating with the, you know, whatever here, they have a viral load, or they put all the pieces together. So it's not just, it's the entire lab that's doing it. It's not just the supervisory staff. They're coming and they're saying, I already looked into this. I
see and here's what I'm seeing
happening. Yeah. And so it's kind of a group where we're looking at it together to see what the clinical picture looks like, and then making sure that we're, if there is some weird thing going on, that we're reaching out to somebody and saying, hey, you know, or, you know, we've pulled another sample from another lab. Hey, can we get your sample? We want to see what's going on. We want to see if we can, you know, rerun an antibody or rerun a confirmatory to see, is it the two, because they were drawn at different times. And
right. Or right. Especially if they were drawn at different times, is this patient actually this patient, or
right.
Right. Let's investigate further. Let's see if we actually need to recollect. What's happening here?
Yeah.
And something as simple as, you know, everything's labeled with a barcode. Well, we don't scan labels. Don't ever scan. I mean, this is a very simple thing, but you don't scan a label that is not attached to a sample.
Right, right.
It's not attached to a patient. That's a tiny, tiny thing that is actually for the safety of the patient's sample, because it is so easy to get things mixed up if you're being lazy and scanning.
Well, it's one of those things that I think maybe is a little daunting for newer techs whenever they're, you know, graduating from school and they're coming onto the bench, like just how regimented and how detail oriented every single thing is. And those, you know, we're not doing these steps to be arbitrary. We're doing this because, you know, this is how we don't screw things up.
Yes. There really is a reason why that sample is put in that spot every single time.
Every single time. What are you doing it? Putting it on the left again? Yeah.
Claudia had mentioned about reviews. A lot of our time is reviewing the patient's chart or reviewing patient's physician's orders, because a lot of times physician A orders the same test that physician B ordered 3 days ago, and the turnaround time is 2 weeks. And so there's no sense. I mean, you try not to have the patient stuck a second, third time, and you apply your knowledge. There's no sense in testing a patient for the second or third time for the same genotype, which is not going to change.
Right, right.
So it would be nice to do a little bit more education to the clinicians to review the patient's chart, patient's history. You know, if the result is already there, there's no sense in reordering an HIV test the next shift.
Right, right. And, you know, sometimes in a lot of the bigger medical centers, you know, the right hand doesn't always know what the left hand is doing. But the laboratory is in kind of a unique position to see the samples and the orders coming in, right? So, yeah, that is our responsibility, as you're mentioning, Scott. Like, no, this test has already been ordered. We cancel this one. We tell that doc, hey, Dr. A over here already ordered it. We're going to get results in a week and a half. It'll be in the patient's chart, that sort of thing.
So one of the other things that we kind of handle in our little part of the micro lab here, we have our own send out department too. So, and Scott works tirelessly on that bench as well. That's probably where you find most of the kind of duplicate orders where you're sending out something, or even there's panels that are very complicated autoimmune panels that, oh, did you know this individual test that you ordered is actually included in this group that you already ordered over here? And so our send out bench, everybody that works on it, they do a fantastic job of making sure that, you know, patients not being double billed by getting a second test that they don't need, or reaching out to the provider and saying, hey, you know, this is a complicated case. Where are you looking to go with it? Or we only have this much CSF. What are your top priorities for testing, and make sure that they get what they need?
Right. We don't just go back with, oh, this is all Q&S.
Right.
And we're
right.
going to pick a test and we're going to do it. It's more like reaching out to them to let them decide for us.
Right. Yeah. Well, because you know, I mean, we're not mind readers, right? I mean, a lot of times you'll see the orders come in and it's like, yeah, I think this is kind of what they're thinking. But as you say, whenever you've got a very limited quantity of sample, yeah, to like go back, ask the doctor, what's going on? What's your priorities? I've only got enough for X, Y, and Z. Which of those three do you want, or whatever?
Yeah.
I kind of want to shift gears a little bit and ask you guys for your advice on laboratory pros on the bench. I know I very much felt this whenever I was working the bench. How do you deal with employees and colleagues that might feel discouraged or a little bit burnt out by the current healthcare environment, right? You're doing more work, you're doing that more work with less people. We're in a profession that you have to be right 99.9% of the time. There's a lot of stress associated with that. How do you guys, what would be your advice to kind of help avoid burnout in techs?
You know, it's like one of the examples that comes to mind is back when I used to work in the blood bank, and very stressful environment for a level one trauma center.
Yeah.
And you had to be able to deal with it and compartmentalize a lot of items. But I had a new employee who wasn't getting along with one of the coworkers, and she was ready to just leave the facility and say, hey, you know what? I can't handle it. And so I had asked her, it's like, well, if you want to stay in the lab, you want to do this profession, who's to say that the next lab you work at doesn't have two of them? So It's almost like pick your battles and learn how to deal with what's in front of you and control what you have the ability to control.
Right.
Look for the wins. Being able to find the weird unicorn and, you know that you had a part in that, and kind of, it's not every day that you're going to have those that come up that you're going to be front and center and hero of the day. But those days that you are, I mean, it makes it all worthwhile. And even the little everyday things, you know, hey, I just ran a VZV antibody on this person and a, you know, whatever. And now they get to start their new job because they have their antibody results in and they've been vaccinated and they can go start working somewhere. And, you know, whatever that happens to be, that the things that we do are wins in other people's lives as well. So
That's a really good way to look at it. That's a really good way to look at it, because this profession can be very, very stressful. But whenever you put the focus on the patient instead of maybe like internal conflicts that might be happening, I think that's a really good advice.
And then as a follow-up to that, then how, what are some ways in which you stay motivated and focused on advocacy, right? Because motivation is such an important aspect, especially when combating burnout. So how does that help? Does it help with burnout? But then, and if so, how do you help keep focus on that?
For me personally, it has to be other things outside of the laboratory. So that may not be part of our what we're talking about, but I do think, like, if I had a coworker that was really struggling with it, without being too preachy to them or too intrusive, you know, I would challenge them a little bit about what are you doing to recharge yourself outside of the laboratory? If it's going outside during lunch, or if it's taking up a hobby, is it family? I do think all of those connections play a big part in being able to do any job, not just a job in a laboratory, but anybody who is in a stressful field. If they're thriving in spite of the burnout around them, it's probably almost always an outside motivator, something outside of their profession.
And I think to that point too, having connections here too, so you know, hey, I'm burnt out.
Yes.
I need to take a step away. I need to, having those connections that we can all kind of, I have somebody that I can talk to that in this immediate situation, something's happening and I don't have to have a breakdown by myself.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I've got a question. I'm hoping you guys could answer. How do you, or do you involve the patients in the decision-making process when it comes to laboratory testing and results interpretation? Because, you know, now this is different than it was, you know, 20 years ago. Obviously today patients have access to all of their results, and there's more of a push toward this kind of almost a collaborative effort when it comes to a patient's well-being being in their healthcare. So do you guys involve the patients in any way in any of your testing paradigms?
No, I don't think we do at all. I mean, we're in the dungeon or the basement doing our test and reporting out numbers. It seems like we're so far removed from the patient, but statistically, we're probably one of the highest departments that helps on the impact of the outcome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, as far as patient care, we're there, we're supporting, we are behind the scenes, but our interaction is mainly with the clinician or with the nurses. So we try to do our best there to have the impact that they have, the information they need, so somebody doesn't have to have another peripheral stick, things like that. But as far as the feedback from the patient themselves, we are pretty removed from that aspect.
Is that something that you'd be interested in doing in the future? Like having a clinic where patients can come and ask questions about their results and what these mean?
We have had one patient that we have actually gotten to meet, and there was a pretty significant impact that we had with that patient, and Scott and I actually got to meet them. I would say that was probably one of the most amazing experiences I've had in my career, to be able to have that. I mean, I think that is a very impactful thing to have that interaction with them. I don't know how it would actually play out, but
if given the opportunity, you know, like, this is what we do matters, you know, what we do matters at a very intrinsic level. And like we were saying at the beginning, sometimes it can be easy to forget that, but what we do matters, period.
Well, and it is unfortunate right now that most people that we talk to don't really, like, outside of our job, just our friends and family, you know, they don't understand it is a big deal where your sample goes.
Mm-hmm.
It really does make a difference for, I mean, I don't know, like, I'm just going to throw out, like, for an HIV confirmation, it really does make a difference which test kit or which company that lab is using. We know, because we know the stats on different types of tests, and we know which ones have a 99% reproducibility and, you know, precision and all of that goodness. And we know which ones aren't so accurate. And if your sample's going to a laboratory that has adopted, you know, maybe a cheaper test, but is not as accurate, you know, that can affect the patient's outcome.
Yeah.
Patients don't know that.
Right. Yeah. That paradigm that we learned in school, right? You can have fast, cheaper, accurate, pick two. Yeah.
One of the nice things about talking with the parents, mainly of the person that we wanted, that we were invited to speak to, the parents were actually inquiring about what we do. And, you know, you have to step back and say, okay, I can talk to a doctor and we can talk about PCR and we can talk about antibodies and things like that in a technical level. But then you have to step back and it's almost like you're talking to your parents. Because I grew up going to college and neither one of my parents, they knew what I did, but they didn't really know what I did.
Right, right.
And to be able to talk to a set of parents and explain to them on a level that they would understand of what we do and just sometimes the technology or the dorkiness behind it is kind of, it's satisfying. Like Carrie said, it was very moving and very emotional to talk to these parents that we had a small part to maybe help out on the care of this patient.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also, I kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but in a different context, you know, it's really easy to take for granted just like how much knowledge we have and how much we know and how in the weeds we get with certain aspects of our testing, right? So it's good to take a step back and to be able to talk to patients, to talk to them as a layperson. And it's like, okay, here's kind of what's going on with your body. Here's what's going on in your sample. Here's how kind of how we're testing it. And this is what these results mean. And that's how we got there. I think that can be extraordinarily gratifying to have that conversation.
Yeah. And then what would be some specific things that you wish all patients knew about the important work that you all do and that laboratory professionals and pathologists everywhere do? Like, are there some specific things that in an ideal world you wish they
it's
knew?
Not that we're here.
Yeah, that there really is somebody that receives your sample and thinks of it as a patient. This is our patient for today, or these are our hundreds of patients for today, and really does care about each one getting. And I think that is the majority of our profession. I really, really do believe that, that there's a person there that really does care about your result.
You know, well, that's why it's one of the reasons the job is so stressful, right? Because you're like, no, I have to do right by these patients. I just can't throw samples on an analyzer and then, you know, go watch soap operas for 3 hours.
Right.
That's not what we do. We right. absolutely care about every aspect of this job. And that's a high level that we have to maintain. So yeah. Well, guys, I want to thank you guys for taking the time to talk to us. I think that this was a really great conversation. I'm hopeful that other laboratories and other professionals that listen to this podcast really get inspired by our conversation. And if their laboratory is not already doing these types of things, to implement them in some way. I also want to remind our listeners to tell your colleagues about the podcast and subscribe through your favorite podcast aggregator so you don't miss an episode.
And to find a lot of information about how to explain laboratory testing to patients, you can also check out our ACP Patient Champions program. And then as always, remember that you can receive CME and CMLE credit for listening to our podcast by looking for Inside the Lab in the ACP store and our website at www.acp.org.